Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, yo, this is poet, author, Mark Lacey. That's M-A-R-C-L-A-C-Y. And you are listening to ATAZP, recorded live right here in the ATL. Don't forget to check me out at www.marklacey.com. That's www.marclacy.com. Read about the critically acclaimed The Looking Heart, Poetic Expressions from Within, and Reflux. And don't forget to keep it locked at ATAZP, recorded live.
The host, PAZ, I got on the line.
This is one of my friends that I met at Persistence Only.
Wait a minute.
2 years ago, and we got together, started collaborating, doing
intro
music.
All the time, spoken word.
He's got a book that's out. And I give you Mark Lacey.
That should be it. Yes, this is ATAZP. That was Mark Lacey giving me the intro for the radio show, poet, author. I got on the line Officer Stan Mason, and I also got Larissa Wright on the line. We're waiting on Tiffany O. Daniels to call in. Officer Mason is an officer in Waco, Texas, and I checked him out online on YouTube. On various videos, he got the God Complex, Officer Stan Mason, Tolliver Chapel, and the Blue Wall of Silence. Very interesting listens. If you ever check him out on YouTube, he has a lot to say. Very positive brother, too, after I got to know him. Officer Stan Mason, it's a pleasure having you in the house. And the first item that I want to talk about is this mistrial in the Walter Scott case where he was shot down by an officer. And I want to know and feel your view and your take on that situation, sir. And also, Larissa, I know you got something to say. So I'm going to give it to Mr. Stan Mason.
All right. Hey, you know, good evening, first off, and thank you for allowing me to speak. Just to kind of let everybody know, I'm still an active police officer. I'm not disgruntled or in trouble or retired and angry. I'm expressing my opinion through my 24 years in counting as an officer and as an African-American officer, so that perspective can be put out there. I'm not speaking for my city or my department. Once again, it's my observations. The Walter Scott murder, that's what it is, that one, I'm about as outraged as probably 80% of America from a professional standpoint, just looking at where the video picks up. You know, if the guy slapped a taser out of his hand, you know, if Walter Scott slapped it out of, you know, Slager's hand, that's fine. But once he runs off, okay, a couple things that bother me with the video. When he runs off, the officer doesn't make any effort. I don't see, if you're in fear of your life, you're going to make quick, jerky movements. He precision. He reaches down, you know, picks up the taser. Even when he pulls his firearm out, he's in a stance that we do on the range. It's not a reactive, you know, survival of the fittest type of response. It's a perfect Weaver-ready position, is what it's called. When he shoots, the feet are shoulder length apart, the arms extended, isosceles triangle. I mean, it's precision. There's no, I didn't see any fear there. Then he calmly walks up to Mr. Scott. You know, he walks up to him. And then he brings the taser up there and drops that. Well, that's altering the crime scene. You know, so I had a bunch of problems with that before it even got to the trial. And then when it got there for the district attorney to open up in his opening statements to basically blame the victim for his own death was like handing the case to the defense. You know, it was just outrageous.
Right. And a lot of times we've had more than one situation like that across this country, and a lot of times they do blame the victim. They criminalize the victim before it even gets to trial.
Yes, sir. They that's why actually what started me doing, I had been bothered by looking at this over years, and the Philando Castile incident, that was just for me, that was my breaking point, you know, and looking at it and saying, well, I don't hear any officers speaking up, you know, about this to any great magnitude. And then speaking up to educate the public, we can give outrage about a specific incident, which you don't see that much of from officers, and retreat, or you can educate the public on the culture, which is what I try to do. And the video on YouTube that I have talking about a character assassination is exactly what we see. We've seen it with Freddie Gray. We saw it, you know, with Alton Sterling. We see it all the way down the line. They couldn't do Tamir Rice because he was a little kid, but you constantly see that. And that's how these juries get tainted.
Larissa, I know you got something to say about this one. I can already feel it boiling over there. So,
Of course I do. I have a question though. Seeing that Walter Scott could have done, is there anything differently he should have done? I know he shouldn't have ran. I know that, but I mean, I'm trying to figure out how are they seeing this, because it was a mistrial. So how are they seeing this? Are they seeing something that we don't see, or what are we missing? I don't understand.
Okay, from an officer's perspective?
Yeah.
Is that okay? You know, you got it right on head. You know, that's the myth that people are throwing out. Okay, no, he shouldn't have ran. But running from the police is not a death sentence. Okay.
Right.
If I'm going to fire my weapon, I have to be able to prove that I'm in fear of my life. Now, if whether it's a man, a pit bull, or a mountain lion, if it's moving away from me, then the threat is moving away from me. How do you justify being in fear of your life when the threat is leaving you? I've had plenty of people run from me. I have a choice. I can tase him. You know, if he had the man's ID or if the car is registered to him, you already know who you have there. Go back and get him later. You know where he lives. Depending on the severity, you know, of the incident. Before, there are a lot of things that did he have OC spray, which is mace, which I will call it. Did he have spray with him? Did he have a taser? Why did he chase the guy and put hands on him? The guy was running away in slow motion. He wasn't an Olympic sprinter.
Yes.
You know, he didn't make, it's almost like he didn't want to make the effort.
Right. Do you think, No, I won't ask that question because that could be speculation. I wonder, did he say to him, like, run or something? You know, I don't know, because the guy was, like, almost jogging. You know, he was, like, trotting away. He wasn't, like, in a sprint. So I always wondered that. That's just what I wonder. I'm not putting that out there saying anything happened, but I wonder, did he say to him something like, you better run or I'm going to shoot you or something, you know, because it was like he was trotting almost, you know, like, let me get out of here. Best way I can. I don't know. That's just my thought.
You know, I can only go, you know, with what I saw. And like I said, the things that startled me with it is I would be curious to know what other equipment he has on his belt. You know, like my waist is pretty small, so I'm limited in what I can carry. You know what I'm saying? But I carry spray. I got an ass baton. I got my taser. Then I got my gun. So I've got a myriad of things that I can use before I have to go to that level.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
But to go straight from one to the other, you know, and I mean, we're all different, but I just don't see in that how you're fearing for your life. You might have been in the middle of the struggle. You know what I'm saying? But when they disengage and that gentleman is leaving and he's 18 feet away and you start throwing rounds downrange, you know, I mean, that's crazy.
And he shot at him 8 times and hit him 5 times, right?
Right. Uh-huh.
And that's actually
a good rate. That's a good pattern. You know, 5 out of 8 at a moving target. Because what a lot of people look at TV, and you get in those kind of situations, and the stress level gets up high, and your heart is beating. Unless you're calm like that, you know. And he was calmer than most people would be, but.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. I just wonder. this question here. I have a question for you as an officer. Not necessarily related to this, but I wanted to know, when you get stopped by the police, you know, because you mentioned Philando Castile, when you get stopped by the police, is there anything that you can do to improve your chances of living?
You know what? I'm glad you're asking this. Yeah, there's, you know, and basically, and
go on, Stan.
You're talking about surviving the traffic stop, really. That's what I call it.
Yeah, surviving the traffic stop.
You have to survive the traffic stop. Okay, because actually one of my videos that I haven't released it yet, but I got done. You know, the first thing that's really good is people need to recognize, number one, you're not in a position to win. You're not going to win that situation.
Right.
As far as trying to litigate it in the street. You're not going to. You can argue all day. You know, you're just not going to win it there. So first off, understand, I'm going to cooperate and survive it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some people can push your buttons. There's officers out there that can push citizens' buttons and vice versa. But, you know, have your driver's license. Have these things to where they're accessible. Like for me, you know, here in Texas, my driver's license, my insurance card is paperclip to my driver's license. So when I hand them one, they're getting both.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
They don't, for us, you know, we're scared walking up to these cars. Like I work nights. When I get off a job, I go to work. And, you know, it's not natural to walk up to a car with tinted windows and you don't know what's what. Even
right.
after 24 years of doing it, it's the unknown. So a lot of times, you know, if you do things like roll your back windows down just for a second, roll them all down so when that officer gets up there and looks, he's not looking through limo tent.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He's going to feel more. And then it gives a message to him that, hey, you're open. You're just saying, look, I want you to see I'm good. And it makes him feel a little more at ease. It's going to make you feel a little more at ease.
Right.
You know, don't make any sudden movements. If you want a video, have your phone already out. Do not go reaching in the center console and you're reaching for your phone and all this, because if you think about it, reaching for a phone, that action is consistent with reaching for a gun.
Right.
You know, and then you pull out something in your hand. Right. You know, and I mean, just cooperate. And one of the things I really push to people, every time we stop you, you are being recorded. Okay? And the way our light systems, and I'm going to only assume that all of them are like this, but the way ours is set up is when we hit our lights, our camera automatically comes on.
Okay.
And I cannot turn that camera off from outside the car. You have to actually be in the car to stop the recording, okay?
Okay.
So what I tell people, you can go out and purchase video cameras, you know, that mount in your car, just like a GPS. You just plug it in the cigarette lighter and mount it up there on the windshield. And, in fact, in Russia, you got to have them have insurance. I recommend they're only like $200, $300. They're not that expensive. Get one. If you're traveling outside of your city or even in your city, you could get an insurance break. It certainly helps if you get in an accident, because every accident I've ever been to at an intersection, both people would tell you they had a green light.
Right, right.
You know,
every one of them.
All this road rage nonsense, it's covering you. And I tell people, spend the money and get it.
And, you know, I've always been raised, officers, you know, police officers, judges. When I go in front of them, you know, I was raised, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. You know, I've always given that respect. I keep my hands on the wheel. I've only been stopped twice, and I'm 45. So I keep my hands on the wheel. You know, now I'm going to hold it like it's my life depended on it, you know, since all these incidents. But I always just keep my hands on the wheel, you know, have my stuff out before he gets to the car. And, I've not had any problems. I'm just, hey, how you doing? What's the problem? I mean, I'm nice. I don't think that being nasty or ignorant or argumentative is going to get you anywhere. You know, being nice might not get you anywhere, but I think being argumentative is definitely not going to get you anywhere.
You know, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think there's some bad officers out here, but there's bad people in anything. But unfortunately, in our job, you know, you can, if you cook hamburgers or Whataburger and you have a bad day, somebody might get a cold burger. But unfortunately, when we have a bad day, I can impact your life, your finances, or your freedom severely.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, and so we have to be morally conscious of that because we work in things. You know, I worked a call the other day, you know, 24-year-old girl died, you know, and I leave that and I go to my next call. You know, you see so much of it that we become really very desensitized sometimes to how other people are viewing what's going on. If I pull you over, to me, it's just a ticket. But to you,
okay,
it could be the tip of the iceberg of a severely bad day.
Right. Right.
You know, so sometimes, you know, officers, you got to have that judgment. You know, I pull you over, you're working at McDonald's, you know, and you smelling like hamburgers, and, you know, you got some little minor violation. You know, I mean, if I write you $600 worth of tickets, just because I can, okay, now you go home and you tell your girl, you know, you're trying to raise a little baby, baby, look, I got $600 worth of tickets, which is your whole paycheck probably for the month.
Right.
Now, I can either pay this and we don't have rent and food. I cannot pay it and go to jail and then I'm going to lose my job. We're not going to have rent and food. Well, I can go out here and hustle to make this $600 to pay this. Now, what have I just done in effect? In trying to do letter of the law, I just produced a criminal.
Yep.
Where
right,
I could have done
right,
the spirit of the law, which says, okay, I'm going to write him. Look, dude, I got to write you on, you know, your no insurance. But I'm going to cut you a break on the tags. I'm going to give you a warning on that, you know. And then you're working with him, you know.
Right.
And you're still satisfying whatever. And see, we don't have quotas where I'm at. Some cities have it. They have, you know, where the officers have to produce X amount of tickets. And to me, I've always felt like that when officers have to come out and meet numbers, then where you would give a break, you're not, because you got to put a tick mark in that column.
Right.
And to me, that's
right,
that's not policing. That's
yeah,
not policing right there, you know.
That's business. That's running a business there almost, you know. You got to get noticed. That's a sales job.
Yeah. And, I mean, a lot of people, and I'm really glad for this opportunity because, see, a lot of people don't know, you know, are your police officers civil service or are they not civil service? And I say that rhetorically to anybody listening, but a lot of people do not know there's a difference, you know.
Yeah,
and, like, my department is civil service. So they can't just – I'm not an at-will employee. If I write the chief's wife a ticket, they can't come in and tell me you're fired. Okay? They
right,
have to go through our unions and civil service rules. Now, if I'm non-civil service, I'm at-will employee, they can just come in and tell me I'm fired for whatever reason. So you can't convince me that an officer that's non-civil service is going to stop the mayor's daughter, is going to stop the chief's cousin. You know what I'm saying? So how can you have equal law enforcement if this guy's in fear of his job?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And citizens don't know that part. You know, is your
so how do you
which
find
style
out?
Of police? All you have
I'm
to
sorry,
do is you can find it out online. If you go to your police department, you search their website, and if you look into the hiring procedures, if they're civil service, it'll tell you, it'll say, you know, civil service examination. Then after that, you know, you've got your physical test and all that. But civil service
okay,
actually administers the examinations, and also has a lot to do with the promotions in the department as far as the testing for the
wow,
promotion. So
yeah,
it prevents people from having a good old boy system.
And that's
yeah,
a good thing to know so you can look it up and find out what you're dealing with in your area. That's a good thing to know. And that's one thing I did not know. I have a question, Stan.
Sure.
What's the difference between excessive or reasonable force? I kind of think I know, but I want to hear it from the...
Okay. Reasonable force is the amount of force that a reasonable person would feel is necessary in effecting an arrest. In other words, you know, if I'm fighting a grown man and, you know, we might be wrestling or throwing punches or whatever, that's reasonable. If I can get him under control that way, that's reasonable. Now, if I take that same amount of force that I used on that man and I use it on some 5-foot woman, that's out of control. You know, a lot
right,
of factors come into that. With, you know, the force, you may have a woman officer that can shoot an unarmed man, and people will say, well, that's not fair. He's unarmed. Well, if this woman is 5 foot, you know, 120 pounds, and this guy is 6'4", 290, is he capable of causing serious bodily harm or death? That's, you know, a case-by-case situation. But people
right,
get caught up in all the time, well, the guy didn't have a gun and he was unarmed. maybe I could deal with him with spray or with something else. But can this little 5 foot, 120-pound officer that's a female, can she deal with this man with some spray? You know, so each one is really a case-by-case situation, you know. You weigh all the facts together.
Now, who,
you know,
who makes
the daytime? Pardon?
Well, who makes that determination? I wanted to know who makes that determination on reasonable force or excessive force. Do you have to go through trial to figure that out?
Yeah, what we do, and you know, only where I'm at, and each department is different. If I go out on a call and I have to affect any amount of force to make an arrest, whether it's I got to grab you by your arm and or, you know, push you down on the car, whatever. If we have physical contact in the process of me affecting an arrest, we do in our department what's called a use of force report. And you got your offense report, and then it's just little boxes I check, empty, soft hand control, intermediate impact weapon, whichever it was that I used, what were the conditions, why did I make contact with them? Was it a felony? Was it a misdemeanor? Was it whatever? And it's just a handwritten out little checkbox thing, and it goes with the report. And then, of course, my sergeant looks at it, my commander looks at it, my assistant chief looks at it, and ultimately the chief looks at it.
Right.
You know, and so that way they know exactly what I did out there, what was what, and the guy can't come back or go to jail and break his own arm and go, oh, well, they broke my arm out there. Now, here's everything that we did, you know, and then so there's a record immediately that night of what I did out there. And then a lot of times we automatically, you know, if we've got prisoners that are injured, you know, I don't care if it's just a scrape or you say my arm hurts, we'll take you to the hospital before we take you to jail, where a medical doctor clears you for jail, because that covers me, see?
Right, right.
But, you know, that's something, but that relates to the Freddie Gray case. I won't even go into that unless you ask me about it, but, you know, that goes back to preventing that.
Go on, Larissa. I know you want to ask them about it. Go on.
I have another question. See, I have all these questions. I have to remember them. You know, I should write them down because I'm older now. But anyway, I can't remember everything. See, and you. I had a question and forgot it that quick. Oh, I know what I was going to ask about. Sorry, somebody was calling me. Okay. How do you feel about? You're a seasoned officer, so you've been on the force. You said 24 years.
Uh huh.
Dan, do you
yes,
feel
ma'am.
How do you feel about mental health reviews for police officers?
Oh man,
do you
I tell
think
you,
it's
movie
necessary.
Gang, you got to go to my YouTube. I've got a video on there that talks about PTSD in policing.
Okay.
And you know,
okay.
I'm going to answer though because it's a great question. You know. I don't know, every department varies, but for our department, when you're hired, you know, you get a psychological, as you go through the process, you get an in-depth psychological evaluation, and that's all cool, and I'm good with that. I think it's necessary. But, you know, you're really, as far as the job, you're a virgin when you're hired. You ain't seen nothing yet unless you, you know, have military service over in Afghanistan or something. But then when you come out here, 3, 4, 5, 6 years out here on the street seeing some of this stuff, I think it's time for some more. Now, that's a double-edged sword. Because officers are distrustful. When the agency says this is our psychiatrist or our psychologist or the city picks them or the department picks them, and you want me to go to this guy who share how I'm feeling, see, is he going to go back and tell you what I'm saying? Then is everybody on the job going to know? Are you going to use what I'm saying to fire me later? So that officers are going to be distrustful.
Yeah.
So, and to offer a solution, how about if you have within the county that you live in, 5 of them, and that officer can pick either one, anyone he wants. And
okay.
If they file any paperwork, they can do that through an anonymous source in the city that can just tell the police department you've got an officer without saying male, female, black, white, or whatever, that is seeing a psychiatrist or whatever for whatever reason, and the department doesn't know they can't target that officer. And if it's, you know, if his conduct is off to the degree where they would go, well, what if he's a potential threat? Well, if he's a potential threat, somebody should have seen that a long time ago.
Right.
Right, right.
You know, and that's going to give officers good mental health, because if we don't trust, you know, you can bring a guy here with a PhD and he can have all these letters behind his name and he can mean well, but when I go to him and I go, well, do you know what it looks like to come out of a murder-suicide, then go to a fatality accident with infants in the car? No, then how are you going to give me advice?
Right.
So if you're not a forensic or a police psychologist, if you can't understand what we see, you can mean well, but you're not helping.
Right.
You know, and I mean, that's just being real, you know?
Yeah. I've always said that police officers, I watch, you know, a lot of the police shows, you know, Cops and a lot of other ones, and I've always said I would never, ever, ever want to be a police officer. I mean, it's a dangerous job. You go in houses, you don't know if people are going to jump out at you, have a gun. I mean, that's just, it's dangerous. It's just dangerous. And then you stop these police officers. Every time I see a police officer pulling somebody over, it gives me butterflies in my stomach, you know? And I'm not worried, you know. Yeah, it's a dangerous job, and I'm like, there's no way. I would be so paranoid. You know, I can say that because I'll never be a police officer. I would be so paranoid. Oh, man.
Yeah, but we get, you know what, it is dangerous, but at the same time, you know, we get paid to do this job, and it's just like everybody's not meant to be a preacher. Everybody's not meant to be a police officer, and a lot of people get their feelings hurt, and then even in policing, you have to find where your niche is. You may be that SWAT team type guy, and that's cool, and that's all well and good. Or you may be that community policing type. And then for me, I can tell you now, I preach community policing, and that's what I live by. And that is the answer in America. It is community policing. And every one of these chiefs keeps getting up touting community policing after there's a riot. Well, if you're going to talk about community policing as a solution, then why didn't you have it in there before the riot?
Right. Right. I definitely agree with the community policing. Definitely agree with that.
You know, well, and community policing is a lot of things. It's expensive, but it's working.
Well, the bank off of what Larissa just said, she would never want to be a police officer. My simple question is, Stan, why are you a police officer? I mean, it's dangerous, just like she said and all that. I mean, what made you become a police officer?
Well, actually, you know, growing up, you know, I never really had any real negative interactions with the police, you know, and I grew up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, but I never really saw them proactively interacting with us. So I really didn't have a distrust for them, but I really had no reason to trust them at the same time. Only thing I associated them with, that they showed up, something bad was going to happen. You know, so, I mean, my thing was, you know, when I got out of the military, there's got to be a better way of doing that job. There's got to be another way to do it. So when I came here, you know, I mean, I went through the academy and scored the highest on the test, graduated, was the first minority to be officer of the year in my department, I mean, rookie of the year in my department, and I got out on the streets. And all the people that I knew and played ball with, you know, while I was going through the academy as a civilian, you know, I kept these people as friends. I lived right there in the hood, you know. I heard the gunshots and all this and all that. And the people respected the fact that I lived there. So when I came out with solutions to problems, instead of, see, taking people to jail all day long, that wasn't fixing the problem. Because we were going, this is 93, man. The crack is everywhere. We're going from one drug house, kicking in doors to another. And all we're doing, we were creating abandoned houses in the neighborhood, and it was a shell game. You know, so then finally I just hit the brakes, and I had a large geographic area that I was the community police officer over. And I asked myself, what are the people in the neighborhood asking me to do? They didn't say seize a bunch of money. They didn't say arrest a bunch of people. They said get rid of the drugs. So then you hit the brakes and you say, okay, and you go back to them and go, you know what, my way not working. Let's try your way. What do you think we should do? How do you think we should approach it? See, because the people in the hood can tell you some things, they're not going to want to get involved with it because they don't want to get hurt in the process. And sometimes officers don't understand that. When you don't live in the hood where a lot of these problems are, and you say, well, the community doesn't want to cooperate. The community doesn't trust you, first off, because they don't know. See, you can run your mouth in the locker room. Yeah, James Smith told me this, and there's some officer over there that's just trying to make a name, so he's going to take James Smith's information, go act on it, and throw her under the bus. And, you know, the community, you have to earn that trust. It doesn't come with a badge. It doesn't come with stripes or brass up on your collar or a title, city councilman, mayor. There's a level of trust in the community I call it that barbershop trust, that beauty shop trust. You know, when you're in the barbershop, you know who's real when they come in and you know who's not, irregardless of their position.
Right.
And the community's got to see that you got skin in the game. You know, if you live 20 miles outside the city, they don't ever see you do anything but affect, arrest, and write tickets. How do you want them to grasp you, kumbaya, let me hug you? They don't see you in the barbershop. They don't see you at HEB. They don't see you at church. You know, they don't see you anywhere else. And then you want them to trust you. And then,
right.
You know, there is America, you know, within this current climate, nobody wants to talk about that elephant in the room, the race in policing. See, nobody wants to really tackle that one, because they're worried about hurting people's feelings. And I tell people, I've never met officers that said, I'm going out to kill a black guy. I've never heard that. I'm not saying it's not possible, but I've never heard it. But I think it's safe to say that America has an inherent fear of black males. And that's obvious, whether you're a police officer or a dentist or whatever. I mean, all black males can tell you the experience of walking in and people cringe or roll their windows up just because they walk down the street. And
right,
that observation,
right,
unfortunately, with policing, when officers react to that, it's detrimental. You know, some people in a store might cringe or go the other way. But a lot of these officers, and that's because cultural diversity is not stressed in these police departments. It's not taught. It's not, you know, it's not expressed. Dialogue isn't open. Officers don't even talk about race within their departments. I mean, when I did my first video after the Philando Castile shooting that morning, a lot of officers I work with got upset about it, you know, because I said a lot of unarmed black males were being executed out here. And, you know, they got bent out of shape, didn't want to speak to me. A couple of them filed a complaint on me, whatever. And that's, you know, whatever is whatever.
Wow.
But my thing was with this. When one of them finally, I'm not going to go to you and beg you to receive what I'm doing. If you that upset by it, I would think you would come to me and ask me why. So eventually one of them did. And it's like I told him, I said, okay, how long have you known me? You know, since you've been here. I said, okay, 24 years. What's my wife's name? What's my kids' names? What do I drive to work? Where do I go to church? What do I like to do on my time off? He didn't know none of that.
Wow.
I said, see, you don't know any of that, and we're sitting here 24 years together every night, four nights a week. So you're not upset by what I said. You're upset because you just found out I was black. You can judge me by what you see the other officers do.
Right.
You know,
wow.
I'm more than just a uniform. And they said, well, the officers just don't understand why you're speaking up. We don't have that problem here. I said, I'm going to New Orleans in a couple of weeks. You know, I'm going to Dallas tomorrow. I'm going to see, we may not have it here, but when I get on that highway, I can be the next Philando Castile.
Right.
I can be the next Freddie Gray.
Yep.
And see, that badge is not going to help me in the middle, at the corner of injustice and wrongfully accused. When they get to that intersection, that fork in the road, see? So that's why I speak up. It's not for me to gain anything, fame or whatever, and likes. I don't care if people give me likes or not likes. I'm giving you knowledge. You better grab onto it, because I'm telling you from experience, you know, seeing it. And, you know, that's why I was glad to have this opportunity, just to be able to get some truth out there, you know?
And that's why I'm glad you hit me up so I could put you on, because stuff like this, a lot of stuff, I'm learning stuff that I didn't know. You know, I thought I knew, but I didn't know. Go on, Larissa. I know you got another one.
You don't act like you know me so well, Daz, okay? Because you do, but don't be acting like you do, okay?
Yes, ma'am. I won't act like it.
Okay. Regarding Freddie Gray, I want to get to that one here. Freddie Gray, are all the officers have been acquitted? Everybody that was charged already have been acquitted?
From what I read, I think, yes, they did a summary judgment on the last ones, and they were. And what particularly kind of struck me with that one, that irked me really with it, is as far as the mechanics of what specific officer did what and when and however, you know, I can't say that I'm on point with everybody's actions because I didn't review everything really in depth. But what really basically, you know, bothers me about it is Freddie Gray is fine when he leaves the house. And I don't care what crime he committed, even if he committed a crime, it's irrelevant. At some point he came into police control. He's arrested. They had care, custody, and control of him. Okay, the police did. You put him in the back of a transport wagon, and at the end of the ride, he's dead. And then, you know, you go to trial, and you take everybody to trial that had contact with him. And nobody's responsible. So, you know, it's like I told a friend of mine, I said, I guess being black is a terminal illness. I'm liable to walk down the street and die of a broken neck.
Mm.
I mean, nobody's liable? Nobody?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Right.
And,
nobody's,
you know, and,
liable.
But what did we do? We can protest and march all day long, and I'm not against that. What I'm against is people going out there uneducated to the facts, protesting. And you can march around for 12 hours. All you got at the end of the day is tired feet. And them officers are making overtime to stand out there and look at you. And it's like I told a friend of mine, you've got to have dialogue with those that you want to protest. Have dialogue before, during, and after the action. You know, because we protest, and you ask some of these people, why are you protesting? Well, I want to make the powers to be aware. Well, if you're being oppressed, trust me, the oppressor knows you're being oppressed because he's oppressing you. What are you going to make him aware of? You need to become
correct.
Aware of why he's doing it and what can you do to counteract it. And a lot of times you don't have to protest. If you start researching these people and these events, learn your police department. You know, you should know who's the day shift, night shift, evening shift sergeants in your area. Who's the commander over your area? What's the chief of police name? Who's the assistant chief over patrol? All that stuff everybody should know. You know, and I recommend, if you feel an officer has done something wrong, you're in a traffic stop, something happened, when you leave, that officer gets done, the first chance you get to pull over, and you need to write down what happened, you know, chronologically, about this time. If you got to make the block and look at the mile mark, what was the weather? It was clear, it was sunny, whatever. Write that stuff down and write what happened. Because when people want to make a complaint, and then the sergeant or whatever comes out and they go, what happened? Well, I think, you know, me and Boo Boo, and then, hold on, wait a minute, what was that? Hey, girl, what? No, people don't have time for that. Have your stuff written out. Because when you interact with us, we could just be shooting the breeze, but as soon as you say something important, what do you see that officer do? Pull out a pen and start writing notes.
Start writing it down, rep.
And see, and then when you do go to meet with people, in regards to your complaint, if you go to their office, I tell people this is a trick that I do. When I go in there, I got my notepad with my questions already written out. But when I go in, I put, it was sunny, the temperature was whatever. I write on my notepad. When I went in, he had a red flower and a blue vase on the desk. He had a polka dot tie with elephants, whatever. So when they say, well, I don't remember talking to you, 6 months later, I can go, well, it was 60 degrees when I came in there. You had a red flower and a blue vase and a polka dot tie with elephants on it. Now, what's people going to say? They're going to go,
right.
She didn't make all that up. This woman is on point. See, write it down.
Write it down. Yeah.
And don't go telling everybody. And if you want a video, if you're using expletives and crazy language in the background, oftentimes you can sound worse than the video looks. And we've all seen that.
Right.
Or you can't hear the video for the person that's shooting it running their mouth about a lot of nonsense, giving their opinion. You give your opinion later. The audio might be of good use, you know?
Right, right. Boy, this is some really good information we're getting tonight.
I hope I'm
really
getting some
good
stuff for y'all. Because we can come on any time, but...
My one of my friends, Ginger D of Orange Room Radio,
She said, great show. She's listening in as well. I want you to stand and explain the God complex. I know it's on video.
Oh, yeah, brother.
I want you to explain it. I kind of know, but I want to hear it. I want you to
explain. This is going to shock some folks, huh? You want me to shock some folks, okay?
Go ahead.
What the God complex is, you know, people are wondering why all these things are happening. Some of these officers treat people the way they do, and it's not all of them, but some of them that are arrogant. The public helped create these. You guys are responsible for creating these officers, too. And a lot of times they just want to say it's the officer's ego. What I believe, I call it the God complex. What I believe happens is you take a 22, 23-year-old kid with no life experience, probably still lives with his mom and dad. He goes to an academy. And when you go into this academy, all the scenarios are us and them, us being the police, them being y'all, the citizens. We take care of our own. When we're on scene, we got to watch them to make sure they don't do this or that. So, you know, you're getting training that's adversarial. You come out on the street and you got a training officer. You're trying to impress this training officer. So he's showing you the old school way to do things. And, you know, you're making your arrest. You're doing all this, doing all that. Well, then you get on your own. And all these people are coming up to you now. Oh, God bless you. Thank you for what you do. Oh, you're such a hero. Thank you for your service, which I get all the time in uniform. And it's funny because I could be coming from the gym. Some of the same people see me, they'll run, you know, but they heap all these things on you. You go in a restaurant. Oh, it's half price, or, oh, your meal's free here. So we're getting all these perks. You know, you got people thanking you. They're calling you a hero. You're eating half price. You're getting 50% off of this. All these people are pumping you up, you know. So you start thinking you're bigger and badder than what you are. Then you get a situation like Sandra Bland, to put it in perspective. Okay? That officer, what kicked the whole thing off? See, that's a perfect example of the God complex. Because in the Sandra Bland incident, you know, if you're smoking a pipe, if you're smoking a cigar or a cigarette, I don't care. You can sign a ticket smoking. And when that officer said, put your cigarette out, and she said, why do I have to put my cigarette out? I'm in my car. At that point, the God complex kicked in. And it was almost like you can see in his actions, who are you? Did you know who I am? Did you not hear me tell you what to do? He didn't say that, but you could see it in his actions. Mm-hmm. And from there, that whole thing spun out of control because of the God complex. And that's how it starts. It really starts with the citizens building you up. You know, I'm glad that people appreciate me. But for me personally, and I'm not, maybe some officers like it, I'm not a hero. I'm not anybody that should deserve 50, 60% off of anything or free meals. I'm getting paid to do this job. And, you know, people say, well, you're taking a risk. Every NFL player knows you're getting good money, but every snap of the ball could be your last play. When I hang up this phone and go out there tonight, that might be it for me, but I know I'm taking that chance when I walk out the door. But if you're doing this job for money, then you don't need to be in it. You know, you got to be real and believe in what you're doing. And, you know, the God complex, to me, is the beginning of the downfall of policing. That's why policing is having the problems it's having. We're not human enough. We don't want to be transparent. Then that doesn't mean the public needs to know my personal business, but they need to know that I understand their situation or the environment or the neighborhood or the climate, and that I'm approachable. You know, and if officers want to be approachable, then they got to be willing to let people approach them. By that's not an oxymoron. I mean, you can say I'm approachable, but if you shy away when people or get intimidated when they come and approach you, then you're not that open. You know, I mean, I hope I didn't go a lot too long on it, but, I mean, they should go on there and check it out. That's a deep one.
Yeah, that's why I asked
that was
it. And explaining it the way he did as far as getting your perks and amping you up and got you all hyped up, you think you're a superstar. In other words, like the group Snap, I got the power, you know.
Yeah.
That's the way they feel.
Larissa, you know.
Go on, Stan.
Sorry.
Come on.
No. Those are more questions. I'm liking this.
Well, I got one question, and but I don't want you to be offended by this question here. I want you to I want you to tell me if it's a myth or not. Do cops really eat that many donuts?
Well, I can tell you, I'll say this. Cops eat them, you know, and it depends. The midnight shift, you have limited places. Like when I go out here tonight, there's limited places you can eat. And if you've seen me on Facebook, I don't eat no donuts. I never like donuts. So no, I don't. Now, I'll tear up a bag of Doritos, but I don't eat no donuts. But, yeah, a lot of times they do. Because, you know, and I think it's because you're trying to eat something that's quick. Because we don't get lunch breaks, and that's something commonly – a lot of people think that officers get 30 minutes or 45 minutes to eat lunch. And patrol officers generally, there may be some departments where they do, but for the most part, you don't. I mean, that's why you see five or six cars sometime at a restaurant. When it's quiet, you're just trying to eat quick because I can pay $8 for my food. And if I get a call, I got to leave that food. And I just blew $8.
Right.
So, you know, we're all trying to generally eat when we can. But some of them need to work out, though. You know, when you look down and you got to lift up your stomach out the way to get to your gun, you know, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, you need to, yeah, that's true. Oh, man. That's hilarious.
Now, I was, you know, me and you, Stan, was in the military. So I'm wondering, is there, like, actual physical qualifications you guys got to do periodically?
Varies with different departments.
Yeah,
but see, some departments do it, some departments don't. Our department is really actually really great because we have a wellness program, and I mean, we got our gym is, man, we got a top-notch gym, like on the 10th floor of our building. You can see the whole city. But you actually, we get an hour and a half twice a week during our shift to go work out. Because it benefits the city's wellness plan. And, you know, I mean, all the civilian employees and officers in the police department get that time. But it helps with the city's wellness plan, which affects, you know, our health insurance. And at the same time, it encourages, you know, officers to stay in shape. So it helps when we got a nice gym right there in the police department. But for a lot of departments who don't have that, and people say, well, these officers are morbidly obese or they're out of shape. Yeah, they are, and people can say, well, they need to be fired because they're out of shape. But you got to understand, when you fire that guy, that's a lot of experience and knowledge that's leaving with him. And you're going to replace him with this newer, sleeker Corvette model that's dumb as a box of rocks. It's going to take him 5 years to even get up to speed.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So he may be physically out of shape, but this guy may be a crack investigator. He may be able to write a search warrant like nobody else. He may be a good community police officer. And, you know, then it's just a matter of motivating that guy, you know, to work out and change that part of his life, because we're no different than regular society. I can show you people, and we all see them in society, that need to work out. You know?
Oh, yeah.
But, and so you know, I mean, and there's some people that look big and they look out of shape, but they're strong. And they're just big people, you know.
So So do you guys get to go when you're not on duty? Do you get to go there when you're not on duty?
Oh, yeah, our gym is, I mean, our pass cards go in there, and, dude, I mean, our gym is off the chain. I mean, it's up on the top floor of our building. You can see the whole city while you're working there. You can go anytime you want.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Just wanted to know.
Officers and civilians, and then you can bring, you know, you can bring a guest or whatever in there, but yeah, I mean, I don't use it that much. I go to a personal gym because to me, I like having that mental detachment. When I'm working out, I'm away from where I work.
Right.
You know, I don't want to be in there and people walking through, but it's there if I want it, you know.
Right. I just thought I'd ask that because I go to gym too. Even though I got two knee replacements, I still go to gym and work out. So, I just wanted to ask.
Nothing wrong with it. Come on, hit me with a good one. I know y'all got that ace in the hole question. Throw that one out there.
I'm waiting on the L Dub. She gonna hit you with it, unless she ain't got one.
Okay.
I know. I'm thinking. See, if I would have took a minute earlier, I would have wrote them all down. You know what I'm saying? Because I have them floating through my head all the time. I have them. Let me see.
Well,
I got one.
I got one now. Are cop killings justified. I mean, all over the country, I know there's some where you go, man, this is crazy. But yet, just like the Walter Scott incident, people think another way. So my question is, generally, are cop killings justified or are they not? I mean, the ones that are not, how do you determine that? I mean, what goes in it? Because it seems like they are justified all over the place.
Okay, you're talking about police shootings?
Yes.
Where officers have shot somebody. Okay, because when you said cop killings, I was thinking somebody shot a cop. Okay.
It's really
a case-by-case basis, and there's a lot of stuff that goes into it forensically. I mean, they get in-depth more than people think. Path of bullets, you know, what time of day or night, how many citizens were around, how many true witnesses do you have? Because, you know, I can tell you find out everybody's a witness when the media is there, but when we're asking questions, nobody knows anything, you know. And sometimes, you know, it's some of them that I look at and I don't agree with the findings and I don't understand the findings. And then a lot of times, you know, it's just like and I don't recall the name, but the shooting in Walmart where the brother was shot with the BB gun in Walmart.
Right.
Okay, do you remember that one?
I remember that one.
Where he, okay. See, people would look at that and say, that officer should be in jail. I disagree with that because people would say, well, he shot him and it was just a BB rifle. Okay, we're looking at what we see on the surface. But this is what a lot of people don't know. When they look at a video and they react on that video, these officers pulled out their guns and pointed them at this guy. This guy didn't have a gun. Okay? And that's what you see. Those officers are bad. But this is what you never hear nobody ask for. How about the transcripts from the caller? What did they say to the dispatcher? That's my boyfriend, my baby daddy. He hit me, and he always carries a gun. The officers don't know him. So when they get there, what are they thinking? He's got a gun. I'm not going to walk up there with a chest for you to put a bullet in and go, excuse me, sir, before I talk to you, do you have a gun? You know, you're going to go through the motions and successfully get them in a position where you can handcuff them, search them, they don't have a gun, then you can handle business. But nobody ever goes back to say, okay, what did the caller tell the dispatcher, who then told the officer? Because in a lot of these shootings, look in the video, you'll see the officer touching his shoulder. He's talking on the radio. He's saying something, or he's getting information. And in the Walmart case, the guy that called it in was you know, a habitual 911 caller. His facts were never straight, and he told the dispatcher that the guy had an AR-15 and was walking around the store pointing into people, and he's reloading now. That's what that officer's hearing coming through the front door. Now, if you've got an AR-15, which will penetrate my bulletproof vest,
wow,
what do you expect me to do coming through the front door? But that's what that caller is. It's not in the video. You just see the officer come in and shoot him. Because what does that officer see? He's carrying a gun, a rifle. Of course, later we find out it's a BB gun. But that officer is going off of what he's being told from a dispatcher who's being told from somebody who we can only assume is there seeing it, feeding information. So if you look at that example and you plug any of us into that example, it makes us see that video from a whole different light.
Well, it's like the same thing with that Tamir Rice situation too.
No. Tamir Rice, you know what, and I don't care if officers get twisted out of shape about this or not. I'm sorry. You know, every car has what's called a PA system that your tax dollars paid for, which means so I can talk to you from a safe distance. If they knew somebody had a gun in the park, a little kid or young boy or whatever, and they know that gun, if they perceive that gun as a threat, you can't drive up on the threat, then say you felt threatened. Now, see, that's retarded on us. Just the concept is, how do you ride
right
up on a threat, a known threat, then say you felt threatened? See, if you feel threatened, you're going to keep distance. We're taught that in the academy. Put distance between yourself and the threat. See, they could have parked across the street and got on the PA system and had Tamir Rice stand up, put his hands up towards them, and that situation would be done. But instead, they chose to drive into the threat and then terminate the threat. Was that necessary? You put yourself, if it was a real gun, You put yourself in more danger driving up on it than you did if you'd have stood off and handled it tactfully with common sense like you should have.
Right.
There's no reason that little boy should have been dead behind that. And, of course, the public, you guys don't know a lot of these things because you don't operate in this dynamic. But that's why I'm trying to educate the public, not to be anti-police, but you guys pay me. So, I mean, policing is the only profession to where the employer, you know, doesn't – where the employee doesn't have to be responsible to the employer. You know,
right.
We don't teach the public anything but what we think y'all need to know. And if you don't know how to ask things, and then we have to be transparent. You know, we have these community meetings up there where you live, down here, you know, you have them everywhere, and you have these chiefs and figureheads from cities that sit up there on panels, and when the community comes and asks a question, you know, they get a philosophical answer. Well, yes, there's a problem with how we're doing things. We're aware of that, and we're working on it. Don't acknowledge the problem. If I already told you there's a problem, I know it's a problem. What I want to know is how are you going to fix it? You know, now me as the citizen, if I'm going to ask the question regarding a problem, you should already have a proposed solution. Don't just bring me problems. Bring me a proposed solution. I may agree with it or disagree. I propose mine and my answer. You can agree or disagree, but now we're on common ground. We both have a solution. Now we can meet and interweave. And then when you do go to these meetings and they say, well, we'll get back to you on that. You know, quit falling for the okie doke.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody tells me, you know, they're going to get back to me, are they writing while I'm talking? Are they writing? Because, see, if you're not writing, you don't want to remember.
Right.
And then people walk out the
yep.
meeting and they say, I don't get, and I'm throwing the preachers in there too. Yeah, sister, I know we're going to get. Then they leave, they say, I'll get back to you. But then when you walk out, you go, did he write your name down? No, he got your phone number. No. How's it going to get back to you? You know, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Stan, this has been a very interesting show. We're going to, I'm going to have to do this again, get Stan to come back maybe
yeah.
about two months from now, and we'll talk again. I learned a lot. I just want Stan to give out his information so people can hit him up on the videos and whatnot. Go on, Stan.
Oh, yeah. You know, if you go on to YouTube, and in the search engine, just type Officer Stan Mason, Officer S-T-A-N Mason. Three separate words. You'll go right to my YouTube. All my videos are there. You know, I own the rights to them. So if you want to share them on your Facebook and, you know, get other people looking, they're short enough to where you can, you know, you put them on your Facebook. They're 5 minutes. Some are 12 minutes. But, you know, if you want to put them in there, go ahead and do it. You know, and then just leave me a message. If, you know, you got a question for me or something, just leave a message. Or you can hit me on Facebook. You know, understand Mason on Facebook, and, you know, I accept everybody on there, you know. Don't let your lifestyle scare you away, because I'd rather, if you live it wrong, I'd rather you come here and get knowledge, you know, than be out there listening to something that's going to get you in more trouble.
My friend,
thank
you,
Stan. My friend Ginger D said, yes, please come back. So I'm going to have to tag her in the next show when we do this again. I'm going to leave
okay.
you guys with a song, of course. This is a music radio show. We don't play music all the time. Just as an example of this show, I'm going to say thanks to Officer Stan Mason and also Larissa Wright, L-Dub. What we're going to do, I'm going to play a SWV song called Love Song. I guess it's one of the new ones off the new album. And I'll be back next week. Thank you again, Stan Mason. And thank you, Larissa Wright.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Stan.
And we'll do this again, definitely.
Got me so high, it's like I'm on a cloud. up on your love. And I don't ever wanna give this up. And I don't ever wanna get caught up with another dude. It's up for you.
Your addiction.
Try to make me go to rehab, but I said no, no, no. Try to make me go to rehab, and I say no, no, no.
The one that you call when you
faded. I just wanna be your favorite. I just wanna be the one that you call when you faded. I just wanna be your favorite. I just wanna be the one that you call when you faded. Got me so high, it's like I'm on a cloud. The way you put it down, and I just can't get enough. Got me so high, it's like I'm on a cloud. The way you put it down, I think I'm falling in love. You got me wrapped around your finger.
When you heat it and you need it on your day shift, the only one you call your baby. You need a freak in the bed, in the streets, I'm a lady. I see you got a lot for the needy. Got your name painted on my heart like graffiti. Making love off my CD while we riding through the city. Got my shades on my grown with them pretty, yeah.
Love it when you kiss me. Feels like all my problems left away. And I'm addicted to the feeling. I can tell my heart is healing cause of you, my baby. And I love it when you